I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a big day for everyone in our state who is fighting for affordability, parental rights, and public safety. Plus, mourning the loss of a Washington State Patrol trooper and a tale of redemption from San Francisco and what Seattle can learn from it.
They just want to leave you out there to your own devices until you're ready to decide. Look, I'll tell you right now, someone that lived on the street and did a lot of terrible stuff on the street, you're never going to be ready. And now with fentanyl, you're never, ever going to be ready. You're just going to die.
That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you could support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Man, you know, on this show, and for I think people who dissent from the prevailing political view in Washington State, we don't get a lot of wins. And that's really why we have this show, is we're trying to get more wins and we're trying to wake people up to some of the things that are happening in our state that are so far outside the realm of common sense and sanity that more people need to know about it. But I'll tell you, and one of the reasons we were a little bit late, we were watching on the floor of the Senate them pass three common sense voter initiatives. And I was just sitting there watching, thinking that there was so much work that went into that, so much stress and anxiety that is going into that and that has led up to that. I mean, I think about police pursuits. We've been fighting on police pursuits now for 2 years to try to get lawmakers in Olympia to restore reasonable, rational police pursuits in Washington State. And we've seen video after video of insane incidents regarding police pursuits where there just wasn't any rhyme or reason to why police could pursue or not pursue. There's been deaths associated with it as well. And so I think of all that fighting that happened year over year, and to see the initiative move forward has just been so wonderful. The same on parental rights, you know, as we were watching that this morning. I think back to, gosh, when we were pushing for referendum 101 to repeal Senate Bill 5599 in Olympia, and when we were having a meet and greet and a referendum signing outside a coffee shop in Lacey, and people were protesting us in the background, calling us anti-trans. And I mean, anyone who spoke out in favor of parental rights in the state for the last year plus has been vilified in every way imaginable. And now to see the Democrat-controlled legislature being forced essentially to pass a parental bill of rights into law, is so much hard work has led up to this moment. And so many concerned voters, I mean, 800,000 plus who signed on to at least one of these Let's Go Washington initiatives. Obviously, there's a lot of credit to go toward Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington, who financed these out of his own pocketbook and made it possible for them to be in front of voters, to have their voice heard. So many volunteers who spread out across the state to gather signatures. So many people who showed up in Olympia to rally, to try to get hearings for these initiatives. So many people who showed up in Olympia and waited in line to be able to testify in front of state lawmakers. See the culmination of that hard work. This is reaping the benefits of hard work. And it is possible. And I think that that is such a wonderful lesson out of all of this. So again, today in Olympia, the legislature taking action on three of six Let's Go Washington initiatives. It's not all of them. It's not perhaps the most consequential ones in the grand scheme when we talk about tax revenue, et cetera. We'll get to that more coming up in a moment. But no income tax, parental rights, restoring reasonable police pursuits are three huge victories. Every single one of you who've shared an article about this, who've talked to a friend about this, who volunteered, who donated money, whatever it was, this is a day where you are owed a pat on the back, where you should be really proud of the hard work that you put in and the difference that you made. And I'll get to the loss that we suffered over the weekend of a Washington State Patrol trooper. But I'll tell you what, I think that the police pursuit initiative, when it finally becomes law, it's going to save lives. I firmly believe that it's going to save lives. It's going to prevent an incident like a tragedy, like what happened to 12-year-old Amber Golday, who was walking across the street with her friend hand in hand after a sleepover, got hit by a guy driving a stolen landscaping truck who should have been in jail had police been able to pursue him. It's going to save lives. It's going to prevent tragedies. I think it's going to save the lives of our law enforcement officers. It's going to make our communities more safe. It's such a big deal. And so I'm just filled with gratitude today. I know that sounds really corny, but it's been a long fight. And we're seeing the benefits of fighting back in a state where things can seem so freaking helpless at times. So there's a bigger fight ahead, obviously, about the three remaining initiatives. We'll discuss that, but I just want to take a moment to soak in the joy that is this morning. I will note, it was interesting, the Northwest Progressive Institute, which I really think is just one guy in his basement talking about progressive policies, but Democrats listen to him, and they're also, I think, have been, you know, obviously vehemently opposed to these initiatives, but they put out a blog post that I think is important to read because it speaks to what they say the strategy is for Democrats passing these initiatives. Because even on the floor of the Senate this morning, there were Democrats saying, oh, we don't even need these. Parental rights? We already respect parental rights. We don't need this, but we're gonna pass it anyway. You know, police pursuits. Oh, this is dangerous, but we're going to pass it anyway. On income tax. Oh, we don't need this. It's already codified in the state constitution, but we're going to pass it anyway. So it's like, okay, if you think we don't need it, well, why are you passing it into law? Well, the Northwest Progressive Institute published this blog, The Case for Enacting Half of Brian Haywood and Jim Walsh's Six initiatives into law. It says, why would Democratic legislators want to adopt half of Brian Haywood and Jim Walsh's bad ideas into law? Well, there are three main reasons. And again, I think it's important to understand, what is the strategy of the other side here? It says, first, Democratic legislators have concluded that two of the six initiatives are mostly symbolic and won't cause immediate damage to our community. So damage. That's so funny. It's talking about parental rights and income tax. Second, adopting these measures into law eliminates an organizing and mobilizing opportunity for the right wing in the coming presidential election because these measures won't get considered by voters. And third, not sending them to the ballot guarantees the Democratic-controlled legislature's ability to amend them without Republican lawmakers' consent for the next two legislative sessions. So it elaborates on that a little more in this blog. It says, with these initiatives being voted into law now, they can be amended by a majority vote in both 2025 and 2026. It says, by adopting the initiatives into law, the Democratic legislature guarantees that it can amend these measures in 2025 or 2026, whereas if any were to pass this November, they would require a two-thirds vote of both chambers to change under the Washington state constitution for a period of 2 years. So it's interesting. I mean, two of those rationales that they give in this blog post are things that we've talked about, which is these are the three initiatives that undo the least. So the other three initiatives, there's these huge tax measures that are bringing billions into the state coffers, and Democrats, they're not going to stop that gravy train. But these initiatives don't repeal any sort of income, any sort of revenue that the state is receiving. So it's a little bit easier for them to do it in that way. The other one, I've said this all along from the beginning, I said, man, if they don't pass reasonable police pursuits, and that's going to be on the ballot next to Dave Reichert, that's going to give Dave a big advantage in what will be a very, very close gubernatorial race. But that third one is interesting. That, hey, if we let the voters pass this into law, we can't touch the thing. But if we pass this into law right now, we have a couple years to be able to amend it. So that's something that we need to keep our eyes on for next year. Parental rights, parental bill of rights, the income tax, reasonable police pursuits. Nothing stopping a Democrat-controlled legislature from revisiting a little bit of the details of those initiatives. And of course they would do it. They have no shame. And this is an election year, so they're like, oh, we can throw people a bone this year. And then in 2025, when no one's paying attention, we'll go in and try to amend these things a little bit. So interesting strategy. Will it pay off? I don't know. You know, the three initiatives that are left, and there's a big fight ahead on those. And I think we'll save that for tomorrow. I just want to kind of bask in the glory of the one of the few victories that we get today. And then tomorrow we can talk about the fight that's moving forward. Really sad news over the weekend. A Washington State Patrol trooper killed in the line of duty. Gosh, and this comes just a couple weeks after a state trooper was shot more than five times. by a suspect who fled a traffic stop. So the trooper who was killed, his name is Christopher Gadd. He's just 27 years old. He had only been with the Washington State Patrol for about 2 years. He's got a 2-year-old daughter, and in fact, we found the video of his graduating classes ceremony, and there's a picture of him holding his daughter, who's just super young at the time, and his wife pinning him, and, you know, gosh. And I look at the picture so young. Nicole, I don't know if you care to share, but when this crash happened, so I'll talk in a moment about the details of it, Nicole's first thought was, I wonder if it's the trooper who pulled me over. Because this trooper Gadd had a favorite spot where he'd catch the ne'er-do-wells and the speeders, like Nicole.
Like me.
And is it okay if I ask you about that?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I see him there often because it's right in between my house and my parents' house, that stretch of freeway. And so he's there all the time. And I'm usually pretty good knowing he's always there.
Yeah.
But actually, I got pulled over. It was probably 2 or 3 days after Dory died. And I was at my parents' and I think I was crying while I was driving.
Because you'd already
I just
been
wasn't
crying.
Paying attention. And he pulled me over and came up and asked me why I was speeding. I was like, honestly, I was just with a bunch of friends and family because one of my friends passed away, and I'm really sorry. I didn't even realize. I know you're always here. And he was very sweet, very kind, and let me go.
Yeah, didn't give you a ticket.
I knew it was him because in my head I had looked at his name and saw Gadd, and I just put an L in it, Glad. And so I knew in my head that was the same. That same trooper, because I ever thought, if I ever meet him, I'll tell him how much I appreciated that.
Well, and I think one of the other really sad elements to this is his dad's also a state patrol trooper.
And his sister.
In Texas. Yeah, mm-hmm. His sister's a trooper in Texas. You're talking about a family that has a track record of serving their communities. Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine what Trooper Gadd's father went through when he heard this and what his family is dealing with right now. I'll go through a couple of the details because there is a man in custody for Trooper Gadd's death. This is from the Everett Herald. Trooper Chris Gadd, 27, had been stopped along the right shoulder of the freeway near 136th Street Northeast. He was on a routine patrol for DUI drivers. Just before 3 a.m., Snohomish County Sheriff's deputies found the trooper had been hit by an SUV. The SUV was believed to be traveling at a high rate of speed when it veered to the right. The suspected SUV driver, a 32-year-old man from Linwood, stayed at the scene. He was arrested for investigation of vehicular homicide. Authorities took him to Providence Regional Medical Center in Everett for an evaluation, then booked him into the Snohomish County Jail, according to the sheriff's office. And we also, there was some reporting from King 5 that he had made some sort of acknowledgement, either at the scene or at the hospital, of using substances. Now, what those were exactly, we're not sure, but we know that a judge approved a warrant to get a sample of his blood. So it sounds like this is a vehicular homicide. In that case, is going to move forward. This is just one of those, you know, I think, and again, the details of this are still being sorted out. Sounds like a DUI driver. It is a dangerous job in general to be a Washington State trooper. I would argue, though, that we have never been at a more dangerous time for law enforcement in our state. There's a lot of reasons for that. The political climate has made it so that there are fewer law enforcement officers, fewer people to have your back if something happens to you. You know, I think about that all the time when officers get called out to domestic violence calls and, you know, they have a choice to make. Do I go alone when backup might be 45 minutes away? And so, you know, and then the political environment that has emboldened criminals, that has made people feel like there aren't consequences for their actions. The roadways have become very unsafe with the police pursuit law and people, again, feeling like there aren't consequences for their actions because they've been shown that there aren't consequences for their actions. So we're going to be talking, of course, more about Trooper Gadd in the week ahead. I am sure that there is going to be a memorial for him. We'll make sure that you have the details of that when it's announced. And also the details of how you can donate to help him. He's got a young daughter that he leaves behind, and again, a wife. You can go to the Washington State Patrol Memorial Foundation. There's a lot of ways to donate. They take donations via Venmo, you know, if you go into a Chase bank, and you can donate specifically to Trooper Gadd if you let them know that that is what the donation is for his family. But you can find those ways to donate through the Washington State Patrol Memorial Foundation. So just a really sad thing, and my heart just breaks for the State Patrol. It also breaks for the Pierce County Sheriff's Office and the Marysville Police Department, because they were first on scene, and I can't imagine coming up on that. So we will have more on Trooper Gadd in the days to come, and also on the suspect who is under arrest in that case. All right, so Friday was the last day for bills to be considered in Olympia. If they didn't pass out of the House and the Senate, dead, it wasn't going to happen anymore. And I'll tell you, on the whole, maybe an unpopular opinion, on the whole, the session could have been much worse. I mean, there was a lot of bad stuff buried last week. And I don't know if it was like they tried to fit too much in and they were having to pick and choose, and it's an election year, so you had some Democrats who didn't want their name on some really unpopular policies. I give a lot of credit to State Senator Mark Mullett, a Democrat, and Vanda Wedge, who behind the scenes were no votes where they just narrowly were able to keep bills from passing. I mean, we talked about a laundry list of things last week that failed. Police prosecutions, you know, making that easier for old Bob Ferguson to prosecute the police, like we need that right now. Rent control failed. Getting rid of off-year elections failed. Oh gosh, helping violent juvenile offenders failed. And then Thursday was such an exciting day. So Thursday comes around and there's two controversial proposals that were still lingering. And I was like, please don't pass them. Please don't pass them. I was just saying a little prayers. I had like a state capitol voodoo doll, like of the state capitol. I was just poking it. No lawmaker. I wasn't poking a voodoo doll of lawmaker. It's just a voodoo doll of the state capitol, just poking it with needles. So one of the big ones, and it was a huge win for common sense and sanity, we will not be paying striking workers in the state of Washington. Thank goodness, because that is just a crazy idea. An idea so extreme that even Gavin Newsom vetoed it in California. And Governor Inslee, we found out, would not have vetoed it. He was in support of the striking workers bill. Think of that.
Wild.
That you're going to pay workers who decide to go on strike. This is from the Washington State Standard. Quote, we were so close. Push for unemployment benefits for striking workers fails in legislature. As my dad used to say, there's no such thing as close except in horseshoes and hand grenades.
Okay.
That's when close counts. Mm-hmm. So in this, close isn't enough. It says labor unions across the state have called on the legislature to pass the bill, saying it will help striking workers with expenses like rent and food while they fight for better pay and workplace protections. Senate Democrats couldn't pull it together, said Joe Kendo, a lobbyist for the Washington State Labor Council. It was a real missed opportunity to help a lot of low-wage workers who have been organizing unions, but who have corporate employers who refuse to bargain in good faith. Senator Karen Kaiser of Des Moines, a Democrat, said, we were really close. We were so close, I could taste it. And this is one I think that they will bring up again next year, particularly if the outcome of the 2024 election is what they want it to be, and if their majorities continue to grow. We've already heard what the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party says her goal is, right? She wants super majorities by 2026 in Olympia. And if we keep going on this trajectory, that's not outside the realm of possibility. And so, you know, the idea that you would use our unemployment system, which is supposed to help people who have lost their job through no fault of their own, the idea that you would use that system to pay striking workers who are choosing not to go to work is insane for so many reasons. But it's also insane when you think about the fact that a lot of these unions, they have funds for striking workers to help them out. So what, are they going to get double the pay? So anyway, that bill failed to advance, which I was so happy about. And then almost simultaneously, Democrats decided, okay, the last possible win that we can get this session is to pass that bill banning natural gas. So that bill has passed with some caveats. Let's talk about it. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. House Bill 1589. I will say, coming out of the legislative session, this is probably the bill that Democrats are most happy about and that I am the most upset about passing. So this bill has been called the natural gas ban. And truly, that is how it started out. This bill started out by saying that PSC would be prohibited from hooking up any new natural gas lines, which meant that no new home construction could be hooked up to natural gas. It also got rid of PSC's obligation to serve existing customers, meaning for people like me, for I'm sure a lot of you, if you had natural gas that was coming to you via PSC at any moment, they could petition the state, the UTC, the Utilities and Transportation Commission, to stop serving you natural gas. And then you've got hunks of steel in your home that don't do you any good, and you would have had to come out of pocket tens of thousands of dollars on your own to replace those things to electrify your home. So this bill started off terrible. It got slightly better. It's still a terrible bill. But I do want to note that some of the worst aspects of this bill were taken out. Now, on Thursday, the Washington State Democrats brought this bill up, and this is this lengthy behemoth of a bill, right? And there was some amendments that came through, and then all of a sudden, the Senate Republicans objected to the bill, saying it violated Senate rules. They were saying that the way the bill was crafted essentially changed other state laws improperly. And so the Senate Republicans said, we don't think that this bill should be able to proceed because it's in violation, it's in front of us improperly, it's not written correctly. So get this. So Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck, who's a Democrat, he says, okay, we're going to take a break, and he goes to review the bill, and he came back and he said this.
First and most importantly, the president believes that everyone on this floor can agree that our legislature has some of the finest professional drafters anywhere. The following remarks have nothing to do with the legislative staff or their work. There is no other way of saying this clearly. The president is troubled as he observes that the drafting and construction of this bill is very simply a hot mess.
A hot mess. That is coming from the Democratic Lieutenant Governor, Denny Heck. And I couldn't help but agree with him for a lot of reasons. This is one of those examples of, and this happens in Congress all the time, where you've got this long, complicated bill, they're making all these changes to it, and it's a mess, and nobody's really even read it, and they don't even know what it does. You would not believe how hard it was for me to get an accurate assessment of what the final version of the bill actually did. I was on the phone with, like, lawmakers from both political parties trying to understand some of the changes it went through. So anyway, Denny Heck on Thursday agrees with Republicans. This thing's a hot mess. And it violates the rules of the Senate. So all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh my God, this thing is not going to pass. But Democrats spent Thursday going in, fixing it, quote unquote. And thank God, because it actually is far worse than it was before that. And then they ended up passing 1589. I mentioned it has been so hard to try to figure out what the bill actually does, but I want to explain it to you in sort of a easy to understand way. So as I mentioned, the original bill would have banned new hookups, and it would have ended PSE's obligation to serve existing customers. That would have been a full-on gas ban. Now, both of those provisions have been removed, but I would argue that the impact is still the same. So basically what this bill now does is it helps to speed up PSE's move away from natural gas. Here's Senate Minority Leader John Braun.
We've heard this referred to as a planning bill. Now, it's much more than a planning bill. I've heard one member of this body refer to it as a study bill, which is ridiculous. This is a gigantic bill that accelerates the transition away from gas towards electricity and puts those costs squarely on working Washingtonians, in particular on low-income working Washingtonians.
Yeah, and that's the best description I've heard, because the effect is a ban. Think about it this way. If you know that under this bill, PSE has been given the green light to accelerate its move away from natural gas, would you build a new home with natural gas hookups? If you're in PSE's area of service, of course you wouldn't. That would be a really dumb thing to do, to build a new home with gas hookups when at any moment in the next couple of years, PSE could say, all right, we're ready, UTC, we're not going to serve natural gas anymore. So the original bill said no new hookups. This bill doesn't say that, but the result of it will be no new hookups. When you talk about existing customers, it is only a matter of time before PSE, that's the stated mission of this bill, is to help PSE get off natural gas sooner. So if you have a home that uses natural gas right now for your appliances, your fireplace, water heater, whatever it is only a matter of time before you will be forced to electrify your home because Puget Sound Energy will not supply you natural gas anymore. And that will cost tens of thousands of dollars when the time comes. There's no provision in here, unless you are low, 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 low income. There's no provision in here for any sort of assistance for you to help with the cost of electrifying your home. You are going to have to pay for that out of pocket. My advice would be to start saving money right now. So if you're going to build a new home, absolutely no new gas hookups. And if you've got gas hookups right now, you start to tally. You start to save as a family. We're going to have to do the exact same thing in our household. Mike and I are going to have to be like, okay, how are we going to pay for all of these things right now that are run on natural gas? Because the best thing, I guess, to do as a family that now has to work within these crazy confines that have been given to us by a government who doesn't care what our budget is I'm guessing in our house it's going to be $20,000. So we're going to have to start saving money for that. Like, we don't have other things to save money that we're working toward. Totally expense out of nowhere, dropped on us by Olympia. And we're going to have that money when Puget Sound Energy finally decides no more natural gas. So it's not a ban anymore, but it is a ban. It is a ban. They can dress it up in any way they want. They can put as much lipstick on that pig as they want. It is absolutely a natural gas ban. One more thing for you to keep in mind when you go vote in November, that they're going to push this thing through because of their climate ideology, and they really don't have, none of them have been able to answer the question, how do you propose people pay for it? How do you propose a working class family, as you cry, oh, affordability crisis in Washington state, we love the working class. How do you propose a working class family pay for the electrification of their home? Democrats, if you can answer that question for me without putting those families in the poorhouse, I'll support your bill. You explain to me how they're supposed to pay for it. You can't, obviously. Now, here's one other thing I want to point out. Didn't I say I was waiting to use this? This is why you keep the receipts. You keep them. So one of the Democrats who voted yay on House Bill 1589 is Washington State Senator Emily Randall, who represents the area around Bremerton. Now, you might recall that Senator Randall is also running for Congress in the 6th Congressional District. She wants to be the next member of Congress from Washington State, replacing Derek Kilmer. So she votes to speed up PSC's move away from natural gas, which will mean no new natural gas hookups, which will mean you have to come out of pocket a bunch of money to electrify your home, which means that you won't have as reliable heating sources in your home when the power goes out. Well, Senator Randall voted yes on this about a month and a half after she posted on her personal Facebook this during the last big snowstorm. Remember that snowstorm we had where we were out of power and everything was a big mess? She literally posted this on her Facebook. A picture of her warming her feet by a gas fireplace and said, when the furnace stops working on the coldest day, grateful for helpful friends and gas fireplaces and cozy socks and a roof over our heads. And then she turns around a month and a half later and passes a bill that will strip you of being able to warm your feet by a gas fireplace in the future if your power goes out. The hypocrisy is stunning. Warmth for me, but not for thee. It's insane. That is the easiest, that is a gift to Drew McEwen, who's running as a Republican for Congress, and Hillary France, who's running as a Democrat for Congress in the 6th. That is a gift. That is the easiest political ad ever constructed. You put her vote on the natural gas ban here. You put her post about being grateful to warm her feet next to a gas fireplace on the coldest day of the year here, and you send that out to every freaking person in the 6th Congressional District. These are the kinds of people who represent us in Olympia. They follow their own set of rules. Everyone else has to follow the set of rules that they impose upon them. Crazy stuff. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Nicole, you said people are giving me hair compliments on the live stream, but man, my hair, I have this little piece that's itching my face. So
driving
sorry.
Me crazy over
driving
there.
Me nuts over here.
Looks good.
Thank you. What is it called?
The air wraps.
One of the air wraps. I got one of the, not the crazy expensive one. I think the Dyson one is like $600.
I know. I got mine refurbished.
Who pays $600 for a blow dryer? See, it's this one. It's itching me in the face. I did the step down, the shark.
The shark, right.
Yes, and I'm still getting used to it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't like my thick hair. Anyway, I digress. All right, we keep getting told that the economy is doing great. It's just humming right along, according to Joe Biden. But then at the same time, the CEO of Kellogg comes out and says, oh, people can't afford dinner, so they should buy cereal. which is crazy. I asked Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital why some of the numbers and data and what people are dealing with don't match up what we're being told by politicians about the economy.
I think it's a product of goal seeking for data, meaning the Federal Reserve has been adjusting down inflationary metrics for 40 years, some of it for good reason, some of it not. But now I think you're at a position where, much like the unemployment rate, when you understand how the unemployment rate is calculated, if the unemployment rate doesn't stay changed, so if no new workers come into the system and no new workers leave the system for a long enough time, the unemployment rate will go to zero, even though nothing has changed, right? I think they've kind of done the same thing with inflation, where it's not completely bogus, but it's not telling you the story that they're saying it is.
Yeah, and it's like election year, so let's use the numbers to tell the story that we want to tell to people. And that's difficult for Americans, especially if you're managing your own retirement portfolio. You don't know what to believe. It's why it's so important to have someone who manages risk for a living manage your risk. You worked hard for your retirement. You only get one of them. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. This is what they do. This is what they specialize in. Their portfolio review is just a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. There's no obligation. In fact, Bulwark won't let anyone invest with them at their first meeting. So schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, for our subscribers, we've had, Nicole, good for you. Do you guys not agree
I've
that
had
we've
some help.
Had a lot of good Sundays with subscriber interviews lately?
Don't
really?
Jinx us. You really make me nervous.
Really
you say
original,
stuff like that.
Good, like stories and interviews you're not going to hear anywhere else. And so on Mondays, we try to play a little clip. Because they're good interviews. We want you to hear a clip of them, but also to convince you and shame you if you have not subscribed to the show for $5 a month already. We're showing you what you're missing, which, by the way, subscribers get $5 off our merch store. So it's basically like getting the first month for free if you use the secret promo code. Have I sold it well enough?
Well done.
Thank you. So we had an awesome guest on Sundays with Subscribers. I've heard a lot of stories of redemption. Perhaps none as impressive as this one. Tom Wolfe was a San Francisco guy. He had a house, he had a wife, he had kids. Until he suffered an injury, this is a story we've heard a lot, got addicted to prescription pain pills, and that spiraled out of control. Before he knew it, he was kicked out of his home. He was living on the streets of the infamous Tenderloin District in San Francisco, addicted to heroin, and then addicted to fentanyl, and finding himself in and out of jail. Now, Tom's redemption started, he says, one of the times that he was arrested. And so Tom was in Seattle because, you know, after he found his way out of this abyss that he was in, he has now tried to turn his experience and what he went through into a learning lesson, not only for his home city of San Francisco, but also for places like Seattle that are dealing with a very similar issue. And so he was in Seattle this last week, hanging out with our friend Andrea Suarez at We Heart Seattle. But we talked to him about this lack of acknowledgement from some progressives across the West Coast that law enforcement must be part of the solution when it comes to someone like him.
I actually got charged over time. I was arrested 6 times in a 3-month period. I was charged with 4 felonies and 12 misdemeanors. I went to jail. I actually was held accountable. I sat in county jail for 3 months where I got sober, right? And then an opportunity was offered to me to go to treatment. And, you know, my family by that point was practicing separation with love. They weren't going to help.
Can't blame them.
Right? How can you? I have to own that. And that's what we do in recovery. We own the things that we did in our addiction. And that helps liberate us and helps us be free now in recovery. The only place that would take me was the Salvation Army. They took me. It was a 6-month residential treatment program. I went, and that changed my life because that's really where I found recovery. So when people ask me, what do you attribute your recovery to? I always say, well, it's a combination of being held accountable by the police.
Arrested.
Right, arrested. And actually having an opportunity to go somewhere where they actually cared enough about me to give me an opportunity to recover and actually have a place where I could stay long enough to get my mind right, to start figuring out a plan and building a foundation in my recovery. And also for me, it was finding faith, in which I found there at the Salvation Army too. That really helped a lot. So it was no one thing. And so, it, you know, this is the problem today, right? Is that the harm reductionists don't want law enforcement to be involved in any of this, right? They're just like, they just want to leave you out there to your own devices until you're ready to decide. Look, I'll tell you right now, someone that lived on the street and did a lot of terrible stuff on the street, you're never going to be ready. And now with fentanyl, you're never, ever going to be ready. You're just going to die.
Yeah.
That's the irony. And so it's like law enforcement plays a critical role in this and being a mechanism to get people that are committing behaviors as a result of their addiction, i.e. boosting and bipping cars and, you know, stealing. Those are the behaviors that sometimes come with addiction. Not all the time, but sometimes they do. The cops are supposed to be there to hold them accountable. And we as a society, because of policy, have told them to stop and stand down.
Yeah.
And now you literally see the results playing out on our streets.
Had you not had that 3 months forced sobriety in jail, what do you think it would have taken, if it's even possible, for you to have enough clarity to make a choice to go to treatment?
There's nothing.
You think you'd be dead right now?
Absolutely. Oh, people ask me that all the time. 100% guarantee you I would be dead.
Yeah. When are politicians going to start listening to stories like people like Tom Wolf? I mean, Jeannie Burton, who we've had on the show before. I have never met, and by the way, you can watch that full interview right now at undividedpod.com by becoming a subscriber, undividedpod.com, a great conversation. I have never met or interviewed on the show a former drug addict who has said that arresting people won't help. Never. Never. Or who said that going to jail didn't help them. You know, I remember this interview, I've talked about it a couple times on the show I did with Fox 13 a few years ago. We were doing a story on this guy who had been drug addicted, homeless in downtown Seattle for a while. He'd been arrested a bunch of times, but the final time stuck, and he was able to sober up enough to make a good decision about his life. So we reunited him with the two Seattle police officers who had arrested him that final time. And he comes, I remember this so vividly. We're standing there, we've got the cameras going with the two SPD officers. And in comes this guy, like 50 pounds heavier than he was when he was all drugged out, with his newborn baby in his arms and his wife. And it was this wonderful moment of redemption where it's like, had it not been for that arrest and the moment of clarity I gave him behind bars, he wouldn't be standing there. He would probably be dead. Tom Wolf says the same thing. Jeannie Burton says the same thing. But because of their ideology and what they hate cops and they want to coddle drug abusers, you have some of the progressives who are in charge of these West Coast cities who just will not come to grips with that. Who will not come to grips with that. I'll give Oregon a little credit. You know, Oregon was even ahead of us on the crazy decriminalized drugs bandwagon, and now they're reeling that back in. Like, oh, I guess we do need to make drugs illegal. We do need to make sure that we're arresting people for this. Because fentanyl, as Tom said, it's a new beast. I mean, it's not new at this point, but it's a different beast. It kills people with ease. And the idea that it's more humane to leave them with a needle in their arm filled with a drug that can so easily kill them than it is for them to go spend a couple days in jail, that's an insane ideology that pushes that. And people like Tom Wolf, people like Jeannie Burton, people like Andrea Suarez, who are out there telling the truth about what's happening on the streets, telling the truth about what it's going to take to get us out of this mess, those are the people who bit by bit, story by story, interview by interview, they're going to make a difference. And so we were just blessed to have Tom on the show. What a cool, cool guy. All right, let's talk about the state of the Washington State Democratic Party, shall we? In one word, it is simply unbelievable. Nicole, you didn't get that? Nicole, could I give you a better cue? Was it too fast of a pitch for you?
No, I was expecting us to do a sponsor.
So I did. There's like, nothing there.
I know.
Nicole, you ruined it. That would have been so good.
I know. I'm sorry.
Can we try it again?
Okay, go for it.
Let's talk about the state of the Washington State Democratic Party, shall you? Let's talk about the state of the Washington State Democratic Party, shall we? It is in one word, simply unbelievable. I know it might come as a surprise to you guys, but Seattle is conservative. We are just a right-wing city. It's really just total Trump, MAGA, deep red city. surprise you, surprise me too, when I heard that from the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, Shasti Conrad, which is a huge indicator of where that party is heading. So let's talk about the context here. So there was a story that came out, it was reported by multiple outlets, but this is from The Stranger, the headline, Republican City Attorney Ann Davison throws municipal court into chaos. So Ann Davison essentially had said that she felt like a new judge, I'm going to butcher this, Pooja Vadidi, was not fit for the bench. So it says, on Tuesday, departing Seattle City Attorney's Office Criminal Division Chief Natalie Walton Anderson sent out a memo to prosecutors saying they plan to submit an affidavit of prejudice against Vadidi on all criminal cases moving forward. The memo made broad, overarching accusations against Vadidi, claiming city prosecutors don't receive fair hearings and trials before the judge. So there was this feeling that this judge is just so overtly biased and problematic and wasn't being fair in their rulings that city attorney Ann Davison took action against this particular judge. Now, I'm of two minds about that. Like, when someone's independently elected, I'm sort of like, I think Ron DeSantis was trying to do something in Florida where he was taking away like duly elected DAs, like he was removing them basically until they could prove that they should get their job back. So put how you feel about that aside. Like, the issue for me is not even so much that story that brought this about. But here's the tweet from Shasti Conrad, again, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, in response to this. This is insane overreach, she said. The conservative bent that Seattle has turned toward is leading to absolute chaos from conservative officials. That's wild. Chaos from the conservative bent. Is Seattle on a conservative bent?
One person is known to be,
just is Anne,
I guess, conservative.
Anne Davison is turning the entire city into a conservative
apparently
bent.
Although I believe other people had to report it. It wasn't just Anne's opinion.
No.
Other people had to file complaints, and it had to be a collective decision, right?
Yeah, so it was Ann Davison removed first-term judge Pooja Vadidi from handling more than 150 criminal cases, causing an unexpected and challenging level of new work for the court. So the argument is, oh, you shouldn't have removed her because right. Now everybody else has more work. But there were a bunch of complaints from the Seattle City Attorney's Office that this particular judge had prejudice against them, which isn't a surprise. All these activist judges and stuff, and you can't get any sort of fair anything. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often,
exactly.
To be frank. But this idea, and I think this is actually very, very telling. For Shasti Conrad to say the conservative bent that Seattle has turned toward is leading to absolute chaos from conservative officials, I would argue that there's actually not any conservative officials in Seattle. You can be a conservative Democrat, and obviously you can be a conservative Republican, and Ann Davison is a Republican, but I don't find her conservative. I find her very moderate, and I find the newest members of the Seattle City Council very moderate if you actually have a realistic definition of what a moderate is. The problem is the Washington State Democratic Party has moved so far to the left, a moderate to them is a progressive Democrat. That's true. I mean, it's basically a party that's moving toward the socialist fringe. And so with it, that idea of what a moderate is moves further and further to the left. I mean, when you look at some of the crazy, Jenny Durkin used to be called conservative. Like, are you kidding me? And so now this is the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party. And what this signals to me is that's what the party is now. The state party has gone so far to the left that they're starting to consider some of these very moderate Democrats or one moderate Republican like a conservative bent.
Well, is it that or is accusing them of being conservative or Republican or MAGA, then that's a way to get them out. So that person doesn't align with them on every issue. And so we'll just accuse them of being on the other side and then we'll get rid of them next time.
And accuse them of leading to absolute chaos.
Mm-hmm.
As if the last 10 years in Seattle have not represented absolute chaos.
Right.
But that's the kind of chaos they love.
Right.
You know? And,
well,
and
yeah, why is it like that? It's like that because of the chaos on the streets that you've created.
100%. So, law and order, you know, being reasonable human beings, wanting a fair and impartial judge, that's chaos.
Right.
You know, that's chaos in the eyes of the, again, chair of the Washington State Democratic Party. So if you're a Democrat and you've been thinking for some time that the party's just gone off the deep end, I remember the interview we did with the Kenmore deputy mayor who said, lifelong Democrat, wanted Inslee to run for governor. She came out on our show as an independent. There is nothing but endless, wide open space and green grass and sunshine in the land of independence. Come join us. You don't have to be a Democrat. There's no one saying you have to be a Democrat. You can still vote for a Democrat here and there. I'll tell you, when you remove yourself from the shackles of party affiliation, life is a freaking blessing.
Yeah. You don't have to say you're a Republican.
You don't have, yeah, you don't.
If you're not a Democrat.
It's not like if you leave the Democratic Party, you got to go be a Republican. I'm not even a Republican.
Right.
Think for yourself. Be independent. And the very best thing about not having that label attached to you is it gives you so much freedom to be able to say whatever you want and criticize whatever policies you want without worrying about whether someone's going to put you through some sort of purity test. Again, wide open spaces in the land of independence.
Especially for voters. I don't get what the...
There's no.
What the fear is. I think that, you know, it's hard to run as something because then you don't have all this money supporting you. So it's hard to be a politician and not pick a party because right now we're just not designed like that yet.
Right.
But if, you know, more people get to the middle, more people claim the middle, then maybe we'll get to this point where the elections are truly independent.
Yeah, it's all in the hands of the voters, right? But look at Mark Mullett, for instance. I know I talk
it's in the hands of the voters, but there's so much money. Money controls.
There is, but I also think that there would be money for... So I use Mark as an example a lot because I don't think Mark is a Democrat. I think Mark is an independent. In fact, I would call myself probably a Mark Mullett Democrat, which is an independent. Do I agree with Mark on everything? No, I don't like his vote on 5599. I'm not even sure he liked his vote on 5599. I didn't like his vote on the assault weapon ban, but I agree with him on, I would say, 70% of things we're probably in alignment on. But Mark is not going to get any help, has not, no help, assistance, anything from the Democratic Party because Bob is their guy.
So
Mark's running as a Democrat, but what is that getting him? That's not getting him anything except he's making fewer, you know, he's losing friends within the Democratic Party. So to me, there would be no downside for Mark if he had run as an independent because he's not getting that Democratic support anyway. But I think he'd actually get more support from people who are sick of Democrats and want to move in a different direction. I mean, he's getting support from some labor groups, for instance, and some or industry groups rather. But I think that unless you are like the party's sure bet or whatever, I don't see, some people need to try it. We need to start pushing independent candidates who make a point of saying, I'm running outside the party system because it's poisonous, because it's led to X, Y, Z. So anyway, but the Democratic Party, come on. If any Democrats are watching, which I don't know if we'll get any of them to watch the show anymore. I think most people are probably independents or Republicans. But is this really the party that you think you belong in? The direction it's gone, some of the things that they've pushed in Olympia, you know, the disdain for parents, the disdain for public safety, saying Seattle's on a conservative bent because they care about fair law and order. That's wild. And this is a good indication. If there was a Trump, this is the last thing on this. If there were a Trump Republican, I guess we do, right? Jim Walsh, didn't he support Donald Trump? I think so.
Well, I mean, there's
But he's not like a mega,
right? Yeah, I'd be careful about, yes, because he was the candidate and he wanted him over other people.
Right.
So I don't know that you would say, yeah, I think you have to distinguish putting it in their words.
If there were someone who are like, Donald Trump is my guy, 100%.
Policy-wise, I think there's lots of people that would say that.
What I'm trying to get to is that Democrats use that against the whole party all the time. Depending on who's in power in the Republican side of things, it's like, oh, well, it's a MAGA extremist, and so all the Republican Party is MAGA extremist. This is just as extreme to the left.
Okay, let's name them. We just need to name them.
Who?
These extremists on the left. We just don't have a
Shasti
good...
Conrad.
No. I just mean we don't have a MAGA equivalent to
socialists
to throw at them. I guess that's as far as we can.
Crazy socialists.
Yeah.
That is if you think that Donald Trump, the whole MAGA movement or whatever, is so right wing for you, and that's just too extreme, right? How is socialism not also extreme?
Right.
It's just a different side of the same, like, and if you're against extremism, why aren't you against all kinds of extremism? Mm-hmm. That's what I don't get. And I've said this a million times with, like, I feel like even if you're a moderate Republican, you are given, like, how do I want to say this? I talked about this with that article where I was like, I was named one of Seattle's top five thinkers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was me, and then right above me was that chick who ran for mayor as a
Nikita
Oliver, who's mm-hmm. like crazy, like led the police defunding movement. And her little blurb of being one of Seattle's greatest thinkers was all nice, and she did this and led this movement. And then mine was like bootlicker, controversial. So I feel like you can be as far, far fringe left, and you're given the benefit of the doubt,
yep.
right? Whereas you'd have to like prove you're a bad person with bad policies. You could be a moderate Republican. You start out the enemy. And you have to prove that you're not some sort of evil, crazy person.
That's because I think that the word socialism doesn't have the sting it used to have. I don't think that it's being taught like that anymore. And maybe call him a communist and then he might get somewhere. But I don't think that it's being taught the same anymore. And we just don't have, I mean, we're a generation that's never really dealt with war. The same as yeah. the previous generation. So from us below, we haven't been, I mean, there's a little Iraqi, but like, you know, I think that's what's missing is the
a little Iraqi.
Well, I mean, towards the end of our, you know, but not while we were 18, I guess, Iraq, right?
The world's longest, nation's longest war.
We were too young yeah. for it, I think, right? So we didn't feel the effects of that as much. And so I think that's what we don't appreciate.
I will pay. Full round trip, mm-hmm. airfare, lodging at a hostel, nowhere nice, whatever, for some of these anarchist types in Seattle
yeah.
to go to Central America, see okay. what a police state looks like,
yeah.
see what socialism gets you, etc. I will pay. Send them to a socialist country, you know, send them out. I remember I tell this story, being in Mexico, where I was like, my friend and I just had a bottle of beer on the sidewalk. And they extorted us for money.
Yes.
That's a freaking police state.
I just had this conversation because I'm booking a trip for my cousin who's 18. And he's going to Mexico with his friends. And I was like, I'm going to scare you before you go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to send you these articles. I'm going to say, like, you cannot mess around down there. And he goes, why? They can't arrest me. I was like, yeah, they can. And I was like, why don't you think they can? And he goes, well, because I have a right to do whatever. I'm like, you have no rights in Mexico.
No.
No rights.
Absolutely not. And they
don't care.
Because didn't you get extorted by Mexican police, too?
My friend did.
Yeah,
the sidewalk, got thrown in, and they had to empty their pockets for
yep.
him. And so I was like, that happens. And he's like, they can't do that to me. I was like, they absolutely will do that to you.
These little whiners, they have no idea what an actual police state is. They have no idea what true socialism is, what it does to mm-mm. a country, nothing. And I think you're right. They've never gone through any real challenges in life where they had to be really tested and fought. They think a challenge is like, oh, Starbucks is charging too much for almond milk.
Right.
Literally, that's yep. what they think a challenge
so
is. This is like the fight of their life is going and gluing their hands to the counters yes. at Starbucks because there's a surcharge mm-hmm. for freaking almond milk. That's yep. the biggest fight they've ever freaking been in.
Yeah, so
and that's why
the love.
Socialism is great.
Socialism sounds great.
Socialism is great if you don't want to work hard. Socialism is great if you have no marketable skills. Socialism is great if you want to sit in your parents' basement, eat a big tub full of lasagna that your mommy gave you, and play Fortnite. Socialism
is absolutely fine.
Wait, what?
You're pushing them over to that side. What are you doing?
No, yeah, socialism is great for them. But that's not reality, right? Anyway, the Democratic Party in our state is actually, it's lost its freaking mind.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying become a Republican, but look at that. Ask yourself genuinely in your heart if that is what you thought it would be when you pledged yourself to the Democrats. And if it's not, for the love of God, save yourself before it's too freaking late.
You know what? I'm also pretty nervous about, like, we're trying to get rid of these old white men candidates. But I'm nervous about when the old candidates go away because there is some reasonable things coming out of them. And they're battling this younger generation. And so if we get rid of this older generation, we're left with this generation of crazy.
100%. Congressman Adam Smith, Very reasonable Democrat. Yes. I like the man a lot. Do we agree on everything? No. Does he come on the show?
Yes.
But progressives continue to try to get him out of office. Oh, old white guy, can't have him. Congressman Rick Larson. Who's running for Congressman Rick Larson's seat right now? Freaking Josh Binda.
The shirtless Instagram, story and I was,
shirtless Instagram model who's like, you know, using city resources to go shirtless and speak to kids about success at the age of, what, 21 or something like that.
Spend his campaign money on Louis Vuitton or
that's
whatever.
That's what we have in store. Mm-hmm. So honestly, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, if you're reasonable, I almost might. You're right, Nicole. Stay in your seat.
Yeah.
Keep that thing.
Hold out.
Maybe I'm not in favor of term limits. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just hold on to that bad boy as long as you can. All right, we got to move on because we got to that Trump news, and I want to talk about it and rant about it a little bit. But first, we've been talking about specifically to people who might be looking to sell their home at some point this year. Whenever the Fed drops interest rates that day, that's going to be the best day to have your home ready to hit the market. Our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com says, as soon as you know that you're thinking about selling your home, give them a call, visit their website, sellwithwes.com, and when you're ready, Wes himself will be handling your home sale.
I'll come out, it'll be me personally, and I'll come out, you know, kind of go through what our process is, assess your situation, and then, you know, at that point, if we're going to be working together, then, you know, we'll bring in the staging, I'll get it pre-inspected, and then we will do any of the repairs, any of the upgrades, and like, you know, when we start doing those types of activities, like the more time, the better, you know, just so it's a little less stressful.
Yeah, we don't need stress. And that's what Wes and his team are all about, stress-free. And that's selling your home is always going to be a stressful thing. But when you have someone who's going to come in, they're going to do a market analysis. They set your expectations. Hey, here's what the market's looking like, where you're selling your home, just so you know. You can go on their website ahead of time, use their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. So you've got a ballpark. And they'll even come in. They've got something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service. He'll come in, help you identify what needs to be fixed on your home, cosmetic updates. They'll manage those projects. They can even pay for it up front. You can do absolutely nothing, and they've got it handled for you. So sellwithwes.com, it is just a better way to sell your home. All right, to a little bit of national news. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled today unanimously that no, states like Colorado cannot remove Donald Trump from the ballot. And I think, you know, I was listening to a lot of talking heads in the lead up to this decision, MSNBC, you know, CNN, and it's all like, oh, this is about saving democracy. It's like saving voters from themselves. And, you know, a lot of prejudgment about what the Supreme Court would do, but prejudgment based on this clearly false idea that the conservative justices would be the only ones to decide and to rule that this was overreach and inappropriate. And now I'm like, well, where are those talking heads today? Because 9-0 unanimous, this from USA Today. And then the media. What are you going to do with the media? I just don't even know anymore. USA Today. Supreme Court sides with Trump, affirming each president gets one free insurrection. That is actually, that's not a Babylon Bee.
Nope.
You know, that is, no, well, a Babylon Bee wouldn't write something like that. What is the liberal version of the Babylon Bee again? What is it? What's that called?
I don't know.
It's so irrelevant because the Babylon Bee is so much funnier. I can't remember what it's called. It says, Monday's decision means voters in Colorado and across the country will have the final say on whether Trump deserves a second term and presumably a second chance to overthrow the U.S. government. That's actually what it says. This isn't even labeled opinion, is it?
It is opinion, but that's what they used as their front page of the USA Today when it, website when it came out.
Literally.
Is an opinion like that.
It's mental. Okay, I have my thoughts on this, obviously. And hey, you guys know I don't like Donald Trump. So I'm going to give you my thoughts on this after we hear from Donald Trump.
I want to start by thanking the Supreme Court for its unanimous decision today. It was a very important decision. We're very well crafted. And I think it will go a long way toward bringing our country together, which our country needs. And they worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly on something that will be spoken about 100 years from now and 200 years from now, extremely important. Essentially, you cannot take somebody out of a race because an opponent would like to have it that way.
Yeah, and I agree with him. This will be a history-making decision that we will look back upon that's going to have implications. And I think the thing for me and where I realize that we are just so far gone as a country, politically speaking, you know, we're in these hard ideological corners in our silos. The media has just failed us. You know, thinking to all those talking heads about how, you know, this was going to be all conservative Supreme Court and all of this, anyone who would dare talk about this in the context of being about protecting democracy is someone who should never have a platform to influence public opinion in this country ever again. You know, I don't like Donald Trump. I would prefer someone else at the top of the ticket on the Republican side. For me, it's because I know what Donald Trump can do to down ballot Republicans in the state of Washington. And I care about our local and statewide races far more at this point than I care about the presidency. But saying that, the idea that you would interpret our Constitution as we can remove someone from a ballot who's never been convicted of insurrection because we believe he committed an insurrection. We believe he aided in an insurrection. No convictions, but we're going to take away the right of our citizens to have that person as a choice. The idea that anyone, right, left, or center, would somehow celebrate that as a victory for democracy, as a protection for voters. That's how we slide down into authoritarianism. That's how we lose our democracy. When we refuse to protect it because we like the outcome of something. When we refuse to fight for our rights, when we refuse to fight for our democracy and what is correct and what is constitutional because it helps our side of the political aisle. That's the fastest way to lose our democracy and to lose it for everyone. And so the media talking heads, people who were cheering that decision on, I can only ask you, what do you believe the long-term implications of something like that would be? And if you haven't thought about that, why not? All right, we're going to get to our Daily Show poll and some comments coming up next. And then to close our show and our closing sanity check, are we watching the death of DEI? Hope so. One can only hope. First, I've been urging you guys to do the First Mark Challenge. Every one of us needs insurance. Would you rather have your insurance handled entirely by a local company that's going to pick up the freaking phone when you call them? Or would you rather have to call one of those big box companies and search for your own plans and try to use their little tools to save a buck and just hope that you get the insurance you need? First Mark Insurance is a no-brainer. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge a year ago. We have been members of the First Mark family ever since. And this is a really good time to have an insurance broker on your side because the current insurance market is absolutely bananas.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum, they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now because it's complicated.
Yeah, and here's the very best part. You never pay First Mark anything. So they're going to handle your insurance. They're going to help you find the best insurance. They're going to go out, shop the market for you. They're going to constantly every year be making sure you have the best price and the coverage you need, depending on what's going on with your life. You never have to do anything. You never have to pay them anything. It truly is a no-brainer. So set aside an hour to take the First Mark Challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Join me as a member of the First Mark family. I will tell you, you're not going to regret it. Okay, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. It has to do with that HB 1589, the quote-unquote natural gas ban, which is just dressed up to look not like a natural gas ban when it actually is a natural gas ban. So I asked you guys, if PSE were to stop serving natural gas customers sometime in the next 2 years, how much would your family be impacted? And I don't know if that's the timeline. It's giving PSE a lot of leeway to sort of speed off of natural gas. And that will also, by the way, make natural gas so expensive that you're going to want to electrify your home at that point. So there's a lot of ways where they're forcing this into a ban. So I asked you, will it have a huge impact, a moderate impact, or no impact? And of course, this assumes that you are a PSE customer. Emily Randall, for instance, warming her feet by a gas fireplace, she won't even be impacted. She can still do that after this PSE gets rid of natural gas because she's not a PSE customer out there in Bremerton. Joni said, sounds like it's time for another initiative, which actually brings up an interesting point. They passed this with an emergency clause. They abuse the emergency clause to no end. They passed this with an emergency clause, which means that it's immune from referendum, which means we couldn't do a referendum right now as the people to repeal it. You could do an initiative, which is much more difficult, but you could not do a referendum because it's an emergency to help PSC move away from natural gas.
Oh my goodness.
They abuse, that is one party abuse. That is what happens when there are not electoral consequences for you. They'll put an emergency clause on freaking anything. Daniel says, my home relies on natural gas for heated water and cooking. The cost to change the hookups from gas to electricity and replace all of our appliances would be upward of $10,000. I ask you again, Democrats, who's going to pay for that? Who is going to pay for that? And hell, I don't want taxpayers paying for it either. I don't want them to put through some big bill with, you know, all of our money to socialize out the cost of that either. There is no good way to pay for it. Let's see. Jackie McWalter Huff says, we are all electric, but we will see the effect in our energy bills, and the overloaded grid will make more flex events, and I am willing to bet eventually they will be charging more during those flex events. So if we don't tamper down our usage, it will really hurt our pocketbook. It's really frustrating. I agree. Let's see. Let me do one more here. Timothy Samlaska, I don't think I've ever read a comment from you. So hello, Timothy. Remember, this is November. Ferguson will be worse. We need a Republican in Olympia. 100%. Ferguson will be worse. That is, to me, it's the beginning of no return. The point of no return. You know, I had thought of something today, Nicole. You know how I volunteer us for stuff all the time?
Yes, I do.
You look excited.
I do know that.
You look really excited because, as you said on the show on Sunday, I live to work. This mm-hmm. is my life.
I know.
We're changing things. We're making a difference.
I agree.
I think, so we held a bunch of meet and greets last summer mm-hmm. tied to Referendum 101. Mm-hmm. I think we need to hold some meet and greets this summer for Dave Reichert. Like some, hey, come meet us and we'll explain to you why you can't vote for Bob Ferguson. And we'll invite all the neighborhood Democrats. Like, it'll be called, like, come meet a Republican.
Wow, I like that you're brainstorming this live. On the show.
You know, something like that. I'm just saying, like, yeah. We need to reach the Democrats, the persuadable Democrats.
That's what I mean.
Eastside, Kirkland, Bellevue,
so I feel like
Snohomish.
We need something that will appeal to the Democrats to get them there. We'll just give away free stuff.
Oh, I got it. Drag show. Drag show. I got it. It's a drag show. There we have a drag show.
Brandy likes those.
And then
anyway.
All of a sudden, mid-drag mm-hmm. show, the wig comes off and it's Dave Reichert. Come on, that's
something
good.
Along those lines.
You think Dave's down for that?
No.
This is the best idea I've ever had.
But he might show up and support.
All I'm saying, I think you're right. Yeah. I think we have to lure the Democrats yep. in under false pretenses.
Yep.
Drag show's a great way to do that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, wham, Dave Reichert, let me tell you about my plans for the state.
Drag show story time.
This is the best idea I've ever had. Undivided drag show story time happy hour coming
go.
To a Democratic stronghold near you. What was
free
I
stuff.
Doing?
Just gonna give him free stuff.
Just give him free stuff. Okay, I got a comments. Bill Biz with a $20 super chat. Our sugar daddy's back. Bill probably has a wife, and he's like, "Can you stop calling me a sugar daddy on your show? Because I'm starting to have to answer hard questions." Brandy, have you noticed the Inslee Constantine pressers and photo ops lately, highlighting their keen observations of the homeless camp issue? They really need to listen to someone like Tom Wolfe. Exceptional interview. Thank you. Yeah, Tom was awesome. Loved every second of that interview. And this is something that we reveal in it, that Tom's wife stuck by him.
Well, no, she didn't. She came back.
Well, right,
<him. laughs>
but she didn't. She kicked him out of the house,
yes.
filed a restraining order,
yeah.
was like, "You're gone." But, like, she was there for him when he was ready to come back.
Yeah.
Like, it was tough love.
Yes.
And I'm like, that is a love story of the ages.
Yes. And I will say, they did go and talk to some of the city council members. I think they talked to Sarah Nelson. So
yeah.
I feel like they're gaining some momentum, too.
And he did say, Tom Wolfe did say he feels like people are more, they're more open to hearing the message
yep.
that they have to share. But this story of him and his wife was like, I was like, Mike almost kicks me out of the house because I don't do the dishes.
I know. You're really bad at that.
I'm really bad at that. And even in here, I don't like doing dishes. So I don't know if Mike would stay with me if I wound up homeless in downtown Seattle on fentanyl.
I don't think he would, actually. I think he'd be gone.
I don't know. He might give it a couple weeks. Anyway, Deputy 5-0 says, as a Washington peace officer, the criminals are basically above the law at this point. A police state in America? Laughable. I know. The idea that, and this is one of the reasons I can't dive headfirst into libertarianism. Because they're a little bit anti-police and anti-Fed, not Federal Reserve. I think we're all anti-Federal Reserve, but like anti-FBI. And, you know, I think it's important to hold those entities accountable, but I am never going to be anti anyone who's going to rush in and save my life, okay? Kyle T says, I'm wondering when the powered by clean natural gas slogan will come off buses and garbage trucks. That's a good question. Just get rid of the word clean.
Why are they targeting PSE? Because that leaves out so many other
customers. Most amount of people, I guess. Yeah.
But why don't they just say all the gas companies?
Probably because of the cost associated with that transition. Yeah, I mean, they don't care about the cost associated with ours, but I'm not sure. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Kelly Cooper says, the Democrats are unreasonable and do not care about Washingtonians because they know the trigger words that keep them in office. Trigger words, let's list them. MAGA, right wing.
Trump.
Abortion. Trump.
Yeah, that about covers
it. That's about it. Yeah, we got all there. That's all. That's like the five words they use.
Slap those on them. And yep. Your toast.
Jenna Hensley says, also, treatment needs to be longer, referring to drug addicts. Most inpatient stays are only 1 month, and that's not enough for most people. They end up going over and over again and being discharged to the same streets and family. They need a longer stay and released to a supportive environment. I agree, and this has been something that's come up quite a bit. I do think also that involuntary treatment, it's so hard for me as someone who values civil liberties, but I do think there's some point where we've got to talk about involuntary stays for these individuals. NWA V8R with a $9.99 super chat. The problem is real socialism is you will have to work harder than you ever have just to survive when the leaders are fat, rich, and happy. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Sergeant Pickles with a $4.99 super chat. Hello, all. Long time no see. At home with newborn twins, but listening along. I have some hope for this November to right the ship. Common Sense 2024. Yay.
Newborn twins.
Newborn twins. That's so exciting. Man, I actually would low-key love that. If I end up having kids, I just want one birth, you know?
Oh, Lord.
So, however,
we're all in trouble.
I'm not pregnant, by the way. I'm not pregnant. But if I were to be, I just want one birth. So, like, give me eight. Give me an octuplets or whatever. That's fine. But just all at once, okay?
No.
And then sew that back up and let's just move on with life. Too graphic? Maybe. Okay, that's good for questions and comments. Did I miss any super chats? I don't think so.
They were all in there.
Okay. All right, good comments per the usual. Let's get to our closing sanity check. I think we're witnessing the death of DEI. Fingers crossed. The University of Florida has closed its diversity department and fired all its DEI staff. This is to bring it in line with a Florida Board of Governors regulation that prevents the funding of DEI programs. That is the headline from National Review. So this is really because of Ron DeSantis, which I give him a lot of credit for in trying to purge public institutions in Florida of using DEI. And I'm actually shocked that DEI programs were allowed to proliferate in Florida in the first place, of all places. But this isn't the only time that we've seen this. You know, there are some tech companies as they're starting to cut jobs, where some of the first things on the chopping block lately are DEI jobs and DEI departments. In fact, I think it was back in February, there were headlines about Zoom that they were doing layoffs. Of course, you had the big Zoom peak during the pandemic, and then it's sort of tapered off. It's like, where do we cut jobs? DEI, this is from the Washington Post. As DEI gets more divisive, companies are ditching their teams. And it's not just about it being divisive. I mean, I think it took that being, you know, sometimes there's pushback that we talk too much about the culture war on this show. But the culture war is important sometimes. When we look at what's happened in our school system, people can call that a culture war, but we're talking about really, really critical something really critical like the education of our children and gender ideology being forced on young kids in schools. You can call it a culture war to try to dismiss it, but I think it's important. The same with DEI. You know, after I saw this, I think Chris Rufo put this out about Florida, you know, and finally the axe coming down on these DEI agencies. DEI, to me, I don't think we can live up to our promise as a country until DEI is extricated from every public entity and institution in our nation. If you're a private entity, private company, you do what you want. You can do what the market will allow you to do. If people want to continue to buy your products and invest in you or whatever it is, and you're prioritizing DEI, do you. But I don't think we can live up to our promise as a country as long as we have public institutions, the government, and public entities who are prioritizing immutable characteristics. It's not what this country was meant to be. It is taking us backwards because DEI asks us to believe the lie that characteristics we cannot control about ourselves are more important than characteristics we can control about ourselves. That is not in keeping with the vision of this country. That's not in keeping with the American dream. I believe I have control over my own destiny. I want every person in this country to believe, no matter the color of their skin, their sexual orientation, whatever it is, I want them to believe that they have control over their own destiny, because they do. DEI teaches us the opposite, and it has to go. So hopefully this is the beginning of the end for diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Reminder for subscribers, we have our regular subscriber live Q&A happening tomorrow evening. You should have the link on Patreon, Locals, and X. So make sure you're there for that. I'll give you one more reminder on the show tomorrow. If you have not become a subscriber already, please do so. Help support our mission and our movement to slowly but surely march toward common sense and sanity in Washington State and beyond. $5 a month. And you get, we're saving the country for $5 a month? That seems like a screaming deal. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.